incredible, and I really, you really gave me a great feeling when you came over to see me on Sunday. I think it was on Sunday, or maybe it was Saturday. There were 75,000 people, and you had a line around the block. Everybody wanted to meet you, and for you to take a break and make those poor people stand all those hours just to shake your hand, I mean, it was amazing that you came over to say hello to me. We met the night before for the first time, and I couldn't believe it, because I too, with those zillion fans you have, it's a zillion and one. I'm the one that I would get in a line to say hello to you. Because I, you know, I've been in this business 83 years. Yeah. Is this being televised?
It is. I'm so honored.
No, come on.
I'm so honored.
But Jamie,
you've made such a mark on my life and such a mark on pop
culture. You're too young. Yeah, but wait a minute. You're too young.
I'm honored, man. You're gonna make
but
me
Jamie,
cry.
But Jamie, you're too young. And you remember my shows?
I have many questions
about my shows.
Yes.
If I was
and about this mushroom cap.
Oh boy.
Should I introduce you?
Introduce me.
I'm so honored that you're saying this. Ladies and gentlemen, we're sitting here with the legend of legends, the man who created what you see right now, my twisted mind. He got me in my formative years, probably from 4 to 11, 74 to 81. Him and his brother are responsible for really creating the Saturday morning and after school.
And at night.
And at night, yeah. Programming block, yeah, with psychedelic messages and really secret society messages that I'm going to ask you about. Put in, please welcome the very spry. Sid
wow.
Croft. I'm honored.
No, come on. You're stealing my line. That was my opening. You know? Because, you know, there's 83 years of my life. Actually, it's 84. And I don't know why I'm drooling. Okay, I apologize. Well, when you're 84 years old, you drool.
It happens. No, you were getting excited.
I'm excited.
You're 94.
Here. I'm 94 years old. I've been in this business, the only business I know, for 83 years. And what's really wacko for me and exciting, actually, because I still have my mind, I can remember all the great, great stories that I have to tell. I don't know, are we on a whole hour?
As long
we
as
can
we
even go.
Go
Oh shit! We'll be here for days. Okay, I got some. I got some wild, wild stories to tell. Because what the fans don't know is my fans are a little agey. Because my first show was the Banana Splits.
Yes,
and you know that was in the year 1800 almost. So I go back. As a matter of fact, you know, we keep hearing about, this is the time of the year that we hear about presidents and more presidents and whatever. But, you know, I was around when Lincoln was the president. That's how old I am. Okay, but when you say to your fans, because I know the zillion fans that you do have, they're a little younger.
Mm-hmm.
And I would like to say something about that. I did 26 television series. And
wow.
You know, and I suggest that you all have a cell phone right now while you're watching the show. And you should be doing this almost every day anyway.
Mm-hmm.
But I would suggest that you call your grandma or your mom, you know, and tell her, do you know Sid Croft, K-R-O-F-F-T? Because I know I tripped him up with one of my shows.
100%.
You know, because maybe some of you know Land of the Lost, because mm-hmm. there was a big movie made at Universal. Piece of shit. Okay.
But I had coming in hot.
Well, you know why? Because
did they let you give a creative say?
No. It was so bizarre. And I'm the guy, when you say Sid and Marty,
yeah.
Marty did the business then.
Okay.
And I was the creative guy. You know. So I always lived in a, since I was 10 years old, in a psychedelic world. And I, when we got the opportunity to be on television, because I knew nothing, and my brother, who I brought out in 1958 to be my assistant, because I was a performer
mm-hmm.
for 30 years. I'm a puppeteer.
Mm.
So, and I was the opening act for so many huge, huge stars. And the most explosive one for me was when Judy Garland was ready to go on her first national tour, I was asked to be her opening act. We played the Greek Theater here. We opened in Vegas at the Flamingo Hotel. Can you imagine a puppet act? That was all mafia. You know, talk about Kansas City.
What played, year was this?
57.
So you were 20 years old, and you're opening for Judy Garland. At the Sands?
No, at the Flamingo.
At the Flamingo. Like, how many seats? Like 3,000 seats.
No, the Flamingo, the showrooms only held maybe 750, mm-hmm. you know. The Desert Inn had just opened, and they were, I don't know, maybe 600.
Okay.
You know, but it was all mafia, Las Vegas. In 1954, I played a nightclub in Kansas City, and it was mafia. All nightclubs were mafia.
Mm-hmm.
Also, I was in Kansas City in 1947. I came there as the world's youngest puppeteer in the Ringling Brothers Barnum and Bailey Circus mm-hmm. when the Big Top, check this out, the Big Top held 15,000 people.
Wow.
So when we came to town, wherever you were, mostly one day,
mm-hmm.
you know, school would close, the banks would close, you know. But God, I have so much knowledge or experience in this business because I've worn so many hats,
mm-hmm.
and I ended up producing, you know, all the shows that I created. And the concepts, I always work with all the writers. But just to throw out a couple of shows that we did that you might be familiar with. After the Banana Splits, we had H.R. Puff and Stuff.
Mm-hmm.
That's our Mickey Mouse,
mm-hmm.
you know,
mm-hmm.
or in a very small way. And then we did the Bugaloos
mm-hmm.
and, you know, and Lidsville and Sigmund and the Sea Monsters. Mm-hmm.
And Johnny and Scott are friends.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my God. So you remember that.
Of course.
That is cool.
And you did the Land of the Lost and the Slee Stacks.
Scared the shit out of kids. Well, when after shooting the first show of H.R. Puffin stuff.
What year was that?
1969.
Okay, so right when I was around being born, this is when you started coming into TV love.
And when we finished the first episode, which was on film, we shot it at Paramount Studios next to Lucy Arnaz. I mean, next to Lucy. Lucy Arnaz was her daughter that I had a little romantic moment with.
You did.
In my life.
But you were born in 1937?
No, 1929.
That's when you were born? Same year as my mother.
Really?
Wow.
Yeah, I'm 94 years old. Okay. Soon to be 95. And, okay.
So, Arnaz, you said you had a little moment.
Well, yeah, you know.
You're starting to drool again when you talk about it.
Well, we don't want to get into.
Well, you brought it up.
So, anyway, you know.
They're all dead, buddy. You could talk about anyone.
No, Lucy. Lucy's you know, dead. I have a show on Instagram every Sunday at 3 o'clock. Mm-hmm. Where I talk about the 30 years mostly, and I have a guest I've asked you to come on.
Love
please, to. every Sunday at 3 o'clock Pacific.
Mm-hmm.
And boy, you're going to hear stories. I know you're a stand-up also. You wear many hats, too.
I do.
And I've worked with some of the most famous comedians on the planet, you know, and I also talk in circles, but it'll make sense.
I'm listening.
Because there's so much to tell you about.
I know.
Yeah.
By the way, just go with it.
Just go with
it? Yeah.
Okay. You know.
I'm going to have some questions, though.
No, have a question right
now. Let me ask you a question.
Yeah, do it.
Because, you know, I'm so sweet what you're saying. I mean, I don't think you realize the impact that you've had on my childhood and this business. You know what I mean? I don't think there's one person from Seth MacFarlane to Sam Simon to, yeah, I'm sure they all work with you, to all of the, you know, the creative Ren and Stimpy.
Well, my career has been so.
Rick and Morty, they all owe homage to you.
Hey, thank you. Thank you so much.
I mean, right? I think we're all born out of you.
Well, that's giving me an awful lot of credit, you know, but I accept, you know, the compliment. I thank you for that. I don't know, you know, where it all came from. It really came from...
Are you
starting as a street performer?
Yeah, are you a hippie?
Oh, shit, I'm the original hippie.
Because it's funny, because I don't really realize how much of a hippie you are, but when you came into my place, you're like, this is cool, man. And you got this, but you're from Montreal.
I was born in Montreal.
Parlez-vous français?
Un peu. Yeah, okay. Yeah. Well, you know, I played the Lido for a year in Paris, and the Folies Bergère, and the... You know, that's where it's experience of what we do in this business, you know, because I started as a street performer. I did not come from a family that understood what the hell kind of a journey I was taking.
So you just started and went on the street with your puppets?
No, what really happened, we came to America from Canada. The whole family did.
How old are you?
In 1938, and in Rhode Island,
okay.
To a little island in Rhode Island, and we decided to stay a little longer that summer. We rented a house that was part of a big mansion right on the beach. It was $25 a month rent, and it was an Indian summer, and we decided to stay a little longer and not go back to Canada. It was our first time in America. and there was a huge, huge hurricane. And everybody on our real long street, all mansions, and people live there a year, you know, many, what do you call it? Oh, my God. I'm having a senior moment.
It happens. Biden brain.
Yeah.
Biden brain.
Is that what you call it?
I call
it.
But you are, look how much more cognizant you are than Biden. You're 10 years older than Biden. 12.
Yeah.
And you're Biden can't hang with you.
Well, you know, I mean, he has a lot on his plate. A lot to think about, you know. And
yeah, like, who to sniff.
Excuse me?
Who to sniff.
Who to sniff?
He's a big sniffer.
Is he a sniffer?
Yes.
Wow, where did you hear that?
You just look at videos. He's always sniffing people when he takes pictures with them. He's a big sniffer.
Okay, if you say so. No.
You're not going to get canceled, Sid. You created this business.
I won't get canceled?
No, you won't. You're a legend.
Okay. Okay. But I know that I'm talking in circles. I start with a story and then
you did,
wander into another.
But can I tell you,
yeah,
since COVID, I do the same thing.
Do you?
So you're 40 years older than me, 41. And I do the same thing, so it's not you. There's 5G towers. Do you believe in that stuff? Do you believe all electrical waves?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
And did you have COVID?
No, I didn't.
Wow, God, you're
no,
amazing.
No, I didn't.
I've had it 3 times. So no ever way. Since all that, I'm here, but I'm like a little bit like, ugh.
Hey, no kissing, okay.
Not at all? No. Wait, let me just, I'm going to keep you focused, but you're not going off, you're amazing. Let me ask you a question.
Okay.
You've lived out here, you're a street performer. That's what you were talking about.
Yeah, let me tell you how that all happened. After the hurricane, we were totally, we had nothing but the clothes on our back. And we moved to Providence and in an apartment that was $20.
A month?
A month. $20
a month?
$20 a month.
$20 a month. What year was this?
1938.
Oh, my God.
1938. Well, that was a lot of money, $20.
$20 a month.
And what really happened, Jamie, is that there was a couple that lived above us.
Mm-hmm.
And they were an Irish couple. And he had a job where he opened and closed the curtain at the beautiful, majestic theater in downtown Providence.
Mm-hmm.
And so he was making a living. My dad was not working, and we were almost, because of it, homeless, you know, to try and scrape up just $20. There were 4 boys, you know. Marty was a year old in 1938. He was born in 37.
Mm-hmm.
And that couple, they didn't have any kids, so they sort of adopted me because I was a pretty cool little kid. You know, I had all these ideas at such a young age.
Mm-hmm.
And even in the hurricane, you know, our teacher sent all the kids home, and I went with a little girl that I had eyes for in my class. Went to her house, and her mother wouldn't let me in and said, you better go right home. And I didn't, because I was watching the trees come to life and roofs flying off buildings. It was 165 mile an hour winds. Yeah.
So you literally were
I was a skinny little kid, so I really crawled home.
So you were in the hurricane?
Of Rhode Island, which was, you know, in those days they didn't keep records.
But so what happened? You guys got through it?
No, we were the only family that made it. Everybody on our street didn't make it.
Died?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
We were the only ones because my mom had the smarts to get the hell out. And all those mansions that up the street, they would send the servants out or they'd come running out to try to... They thought it was so dangerous for my mom, tied me and Marty and my other brother to her, or would have flown away, you know.
Tied to what?
Tied us to her as we crawled up the street, you know.
In the hurricane?
In the hurricane.
Why didn't you stay in the basement?
There was no basement in our house. I mean, when we came back, there was just a hole. I mean, it took all those houses on that street.
Where were you crawling to?
Shelter? Well, trying to get away, you know, because in a hurricane, the ocean turns over and it becomes all dark and it follows you like a wild animal, you know, because it would raise, the water would raise, you know, quickly, and that's why people drowned. They went to the second floor. I don't know how we made it up to the end of the block, but...
Where did you go once you got to the end of the block?
There was a little candy store, and they lived in the back of the candy store. Yeah.
And the water didn't get there?
Yes, it did. We were soaking wet, and we went to the back of the candy store where they lived. And before you knew it, the water was pouring into the candy store, the ocean. And so my mom, you know, there was a big plate glass window in the front of the candy store. Threw a rocking chair
through
the glass. Well, we couldn't get out. She couldn't open the doors. But I'm wandering.
I'm wandering, fascinated by this.
But I'm wandering too much. And I
want to know how you got out of the candy store. She threw a plate, rocking glass through the, and then you guys crawled out?
You know, she took each one of us across this big highway, which had a little hill on the other side, you know, and she would.
You got above ground. Higher ground.
And then there was a car that passed us on the street up there and took us to the fire station. And and the guy that was, the old man that was driving the car, he already lost some of his family. So my mother took over and drove us to all of us. Because my mother was a doctor.
Your general practitioner. Strong.
So, you know, she just, at the fire station, there were already people injured. But this is not interesting. Okay. To me, the most.
About cartoons. That was really interesting.
It was. The most interesting part of my life is I've always gone left. And I want to tell everybody out there, because everybody follows the leader and everybody gets, you know, on the right-hand side, you know, and they don't take chances. And I always, that as long as I can remember being in this business, because I'm self-taught, you know, and I just have gone left. And I tell everybody, take that chance. Because when I came up with H.R. Puffin stuff and we finished the first show, it was so psychedelic. And it was just, even the title, people thought, you know, H.R. was hand-rolled, and it was, and I thought...
I never knew that.
Yeah, well, it wasn't. And when I looked at the first show, the first cut of it, I thought for sure my career is over, because little kids, 5, 6 years old, to take them into that world, you know.
Was it weed influenced?
Well, you know, I'm always asked that.
Well,
we've been going to Comic-Con here in San Diego for 50 years when it first started.
When did it get big? Can I ask you that? When did it
blow
up?
Yeah, well, I don't remember, because the first time it was like 500 people, and now it's, you know.
Do you know who James Gunn is?
Yeah.
So James Gunn used to live in my back house.
No way.
Yes.
Wow.
Brilliant mind. I did a movie with his brother, and his brother gave me 3 scripts, and all of them were different genres and all absolutely brilliant. So I was like, we got to make a movie together. And the first time we became friends, the first time I ever saw Comic-Con was, he went in 1999. And he's like, I'm going down there to trade comics. And I wasn't a comic guy. And he handed me a book called, oh my God, my brains. I'm having a mini senior moment.
It's contagious.
Yes.
Because I'm in this room.
The Watchmen. Have you ever seen
it? Oh, of course.
He gave me The Watchmen. He says, you're welcome. And he says, here's your intro into the world.
No way.
And I wasn't a comic guy. I wasn't in this. Yeah. And I couldn't put it down. So I never knew about Comic-Con until him. But he went down literally to like buy cool comics. But then somewhere Hollywood co-opted it. When did it become huge?
Every year we would do a panel, a 45-minute panel. The last 15 minutes would be Q&A.
Mm-hmm.
And it was always in that big theater. And don't forget, Comic-Con, kids didn't go. It was all adults. Yeah. And
collectors.
Collectors, and they got in costumes, you know. And Comic-Con wasn't, I want a star's autograph. It was nothing like that, which is now all over the country. And, you know, and they'll stand in line for 4 or 5 hours.
I didn't make them wait that long.
Huh?
I didn't make them wait that long.
Really?
I would give you a pass, by the way.
Really?
Yeah, I wouldn't make you wait that long.
Okay.
She said you would wait.
But, you know, every year we would come back and they were standing. The theater was huge. They were standing against the walls because they grew up with all of my shows.
Yes.
So every year I would be so worried that there'd be nobody out there. How many, you know, all we talked about was the television shows. You know, we did Donnie Marie, the Brady Bunch Hour, Barbara Mandrell and the Mandrell Sisters, DC Follies. Yeah. Talk about presidents. You know, that was Fred Willard was the bartender. You remember?
Yes,
that?
Fred.
Yeah,
Willard.
And Reagan was the main character because it was a bar.
Those are all the puppets, right?
Life size puppets. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it was a huge, huge hit for us. And Reagan, just to tell you a story, I got to tell you one story.
Tell me.
Yeah, the last day he was in office, we were told by our
assistant
that the White House is calling. And I said to Marty, it's a joke, you know, because the guys that did the voices for all those, and girls that did the voices for all those characters, spot on, said President Reagan is on the phone. And so we did take the call. And it really was him. And he said, every Friday night, I just want to let you know, everybody in the White House would watch DC Follies. And then on Monday, we'd all talk about it. And I said, I really apologize how we, you know, portrayed him, because it was comedy, right? And so, and he said, no, I absolutely loved it. I said, well, I never allowed, you know, a knife to be thrown into your body, or, you know, we never did anything like that. But oh my God,
what a call!
It was incredible. I did meet him through Tony Martin and Sid Charisse, because I used to play the Coconut Grove here.
On Sunset?
No, the Coconut Grove was in the Ambassador Hotel, and in the 50s, it was all big dance band. And when you went to the Coconut Grove, even on a Tuesday night, you wore a tuxedo and the women wore gowns.
Do you miss how society used to be?
Well, I do, but, you know, I moved with the time.
I know.
And you have to do that. You can't say, well, back in the 40s, you know, I was in vaudeville. I was in burlesque. I traveled with the Ringling Brothers Barnum and Bailey Circus as the world's youngest puppeteer in the freak show. It was the hardest life, but who would know that many years later we would make a movie about it? It was a movie of the week for NBC. See, we don't know where our paths are going to take us, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And we think, why am I here? Why am I doing that? I'm a little kid, the circus. And it was frightening. It was just a frightening. You know, you are allowed to call them, in those days, freaks. They didn't. Not only did they not like each other, but I was not from their world, and so they weren't friendly to me.
You know? So, like the bearded lady and the strongest man and the snake.
Yeah, but it was all real, it was all real in the Ringling Brothers Barnum and Bailey Circus. There was one. I apologize, but there was one freak there that was the man without a face.
Oh, Jesus!
And he was born, you know, and he protected me.
That's beautiful.
Yeah. But he wore a mask, and when he took the mask off, I only looked once. Women would faint. I mean, he was born without eyebrows, eyelids. I mean, he had a slit for a mouth, two holes for his ears, and no construction. You know, his face was like, and two holes for his nose. It was frightening, but I can always hear his gentle voice in telling me, don't talk to that person or that. It was very dangerous working in the circus for a little kid. Yeah.
Wait a minute, there's so much to unpack there. So this man didn't have a face. Do you know the condition?
He was the man without a face.
He
was born that way.
So it literally just had the things that we have, but without all the appendages.
Yeah. No, it was, like, very scary.
But he had skin.
He did, yeah. But
he wore a mask because he was.
He wore a mask when they introduced him. We were, all the freaks had their own stage. Our tent held 3,000 people, because the circus would always be sold out, you know. The two performances they would do, the matinee and the evening show. And there were 1,800 performers. 1,800.
All of those living
conditions. And we traveled with 50 elephants, 150 horses. Can you imagine being in Kansas City and a giraffe? You saw a giraffe in Kansas City.
No.
It was bigger than any... zoo in America. They travel with the strangest animals, a hippopotamus,
which can be dangerous.
Yeah.
I have to ask you some questions. Wait, so the man without a face.
Yeah.
So you had the freak show, which they're called, I know.
50 cents. It cost 50 cents.
And what would his thing be? Would he take off his mask?
He would talk. And then he'd take his mask off and women just passed out. And then he, I always saw him. I only saw him once.
Without it.
No, I never looked over there. People would scream. It was like scream. I got to ask you a question.
Yes. But by the way, that was beautiful that the most man was the, he was considered the biggest freak, but the most gentle soul.
He was incredible. Because there were different classes
which makes sense because of
people, the people in that traveled with the circus. We were not allowed to ever talk to the big top.
You were a sideshow?
Sideshow.
Literally a sideshow.
And we lived in our own world. Big Top was never allowed to even come to Sideshow. Sideshow, every class had their own cookhouse where they fed us the shittiest food.
I have a lot of questions, so I'm going to keep you focused, but I hate to rein you in because I love where you're going. So how old were you?
15, just turning 16.
You got discovered on the street?
As a street performer?
Yeah, for the circus?
No, what happened was the first movie that I saw, if I got to the theater at 6 o'clock in the morning, the couple that lived upstairs, he opened and closed the curtain. He was a stage hand.
Yeah.
And he said, if you come backstage at 6 o'clock, I'm going to sneak you into the theater. Because it's the very first showing of The Wizard of Oz.
Never saw a
full-length movie. I went to see serials, you know, Flash Gordon, you know.
That was your first movie?
That was the first
full-length. What year?
1939. And I knew that I'm 10 years old. I knew that I wanted to be in that world. I was too tall to be a munchkin. At that point. And then I knew there was something in that world that I wanted to explore, you know, when I got older. I was a very shy kid. So
how did you get discovered for the circus? This is incredible.
But now... A week later, that gentleman that opened and closed the curtain and sort of adopted me said, I have one ticket to the Vaudeville Theater, the Fays Theater, and I'm going to talk to your dad. Let him drop you off. Let him ask somebody to bring you into the theater. I never saw a live show. And that happened. To the matinee on a Saturday. And the opening of it, of the show, it was the Meglin Kiddies. Do you know who that was?
No.
They built the El Capitan Theater here for the Meglin Kiddies. It was this woman that found Shirley Temple and Jackie Coogan and Mickey Rooney, when they were little kids. Wow. She discovered all. And they would perform here in Hollywood, and then they'd go on tour, you know, and play vaudeville theaters for a week.
Okay.
So the second act, the stage went dark, and there was a suitcase. It had to be a kid standing behind the suitcase. Just the spotlight hit the suitcase, and the suitcase opened, and a clown, a marionette, I never saw a marionette, I thought it was a little person, peeked out of the side, and, you know, the whole orchestra was kids, too. I don't know, the cast was maybe 75, 100 people in that show. You know, it was like Busby Berkeley. So the clown peeked out. He got up on top of the suitcase, and he blew up a balloon, and the balloon broke. And the clown became real sad, and I started to cry. and but real loud, and the whole audience screamed, "Shut up," or whatever they, and the ushers came down, and I cried louder and louder for this clown. It just affected me. 10 years old, right? And then the ushers came down and said to the couple that brought me in, "This your kid?" And they said, "No." And then threw me out of the theater. I didn't see the whole act. So I'm waiting for my dad in front of the theater. And I was still crying for that. I thought it was a little man, mm-hmm. because you couldn't really see the strings. But a kid was operating. It had to be a kid because the whole show was kid. You know, and with just the spotlight on the clown. And then people would walk by and say, "Where's your mom? Where's your dad? Should we call the police? Why?" You know, mm-hmm. and I couldn't even answer. There was a kid that lived on my street that had the first Superman comic book.
Oh, my God.
And every day we could read, but every day we would look at the pictures in this comic book.
Where's that at?
The kid has it.
Where's that kid at?
Yeah, I know. Probably not on our planet anymore.
Well, I mean, come on. Where's the book? That's
okay, but listen to this. In the back of the book, we never looked at the back. There was an ad for a marionette.
Okay.
$3.95. I went to my dad, and I said, "Can I get that?" And he never hit me, but he was close. He said, $3.95, that would feed your family for a month.
Yeah.
That's you know, and you're a boy and you want a dolly? Mm-hmm. I never forgot that because years later in 1955, I did a command performance for the Queen. It was a big show. It was 100 star, night of 100 stars in London at the Palladium. And she came back. We all lined up after the 5-hour show. It was her charity. And she was very young in 55. And so she had a lady in waiting behind her who told her who everybody is. I could use that lady right now because I have a hard time with people's names. And when she got to me, she said, "What cute little dolly." And I heard my dad, mm-hmm. and I almost gave her the finger. I was, you know.
You're 26.
Yeah. And I wouldn't be here in this magical room with you.
If you didn't have
dollars. You know, I'd be in the Bastille. No, in the dungeon, right? If I did this to the Queen.
I'm glad you didn't.
No.
I want to go back. How did you get to the circus?
Okay. Now, I send away, in that book, too, in the comic book.
You order it.
There was an ad next to the ad to the puppets. If you send away for a box of 100 Christmas cards, beautiful Christmas cards, that you'd sell for 50 cents for 100 of them, that you could keep a nickel. So I didn't tell my mom or dad, and after school I sent away, you know, and I used to run down to the mailbox before they did, you know, every single day. And after school I would try to save $3.95. out of selling Christmas cards. I'm 10.
How did you get the money to buy them?
No, they send it to you free.
Wow. And yeah. Then you were selling them.
And I was selling them.
Amazing.
In those days, they trusted you. Mm-hmm. You didn't have to lock the door.
I know. Beautiful.
Yeah. And so then I saved up, I guess this was July, and I got my first puppet. The couple up above for Christmas gave me a little Victrola. It was used that you wind up So now I'm in the street with my Victrola. I borrowed a record from my mom. She had a little collection of records, a singer. And now I'm self-taught, and there's hundreds of people seeing this little kid. And, you know, now I'm selling a pot shit full of Christmas cards, and I'm making 50 cents a day or 75 cents. And my dad caught on. He wasn't working. So he became my manager.
Mm-hmm.
And I began to support the family. Now I got, there was a magazine called Billboard. And Billboard was not music. It was circuses, carnivals. But there was always ads in there. Someone selling marionettes for $25. You know, my dad let me build my
act. And you were doing the show on the street?
On the street.
In front of your place?
No, blocks away downtown. After school, I would walk a mile or whatever.
Every day you would do a show? Yeah. And people and would just throw Christmas you a penny, a nickel?
No, I'd sell my Christmas cards and make a nickel.
But you were performing for big crowds.
Yeah, but
they didn't pay you for that.
Yeah, I did put my little hat down. Yeah, but they would buy my Christmas cards
too.
Yeah.
So you're making like almost $30 a month. You could pay for the rent.
Oh yeah, yeah.
So now
I'm building and building. You know, now I have self-taught. I didn't know any other puppeteer. I made up my own tricks. It's like a magician, you know. And so they have their tricks that they don't expose to anyone. Well, I had my tricks that I worked out with my puppets. I had a puppet that smoked a cigarette, no tube going up to me. I built a little lung inside of the puppet, and when I pulled a string, it would inhale, and then I'd let the string go, and it would exhale, you know.
Real
and
smoke?
And I even had a little lighter
that
would light. Yeah, and people, you know, I had a stripper. I mean, I wanted it to be not for kids. I'm a kid, but I didn't want to do like a little kid puppet show, or, you know what I mean? And because nobody had tapped that world. So then I'm 14 years old, and I'm working burlesque theaters because of my stripper, but I wasn't allowed to take a bow, you know, or they'd be raided, you know.
What does that mean? You were on stage.
Burlesque, Minsky's burlesque. You know, you had to be 21.
I know. So
to buy a ticket.
So they let you in there.
They hired me, but I couldn't take a bow. I mean, if a strip,
how would the bow expose you? I suppose.
Naked women were running around,
I
and
know.
I'm 14 years old. You know, if on stage, if her tassel or her pasty fell off, the place would be raided, you know.
But I don't understand how taking a bow doesn't. You're still in the place. It makes no sense.
No, but they couldn't see me because the spotlight was always on the puppet.
Oh, it was just the puppet.
Yeah,
and you were behind the scenes.
Yeah.
I get
not
it.
In a stage, but I was all in black and the spotlight. Yeah.
Wow.
And then so now I see an ad. The circus is in town, New York. We just moved to New York from Providence.
What part of New York? Queens?
The Bronx.
The Bronx.
Yeah.
So you're 14 years old, you're living in the Bronx.
Yeah, when the subway was a nickel. Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
And now I have an act, and I auditioned for my first agent. And he was a two-bit agent in the Brill Building. That's all music. But he had this tiny office, and he handled maybe three or four acts, you know, and I auditioned with my Victrola, And my dad came and kept winding the Victrola because it would run out. Mm-hmm. And he said, I can't sell a puppet act. You have to change. You know, I can't say puppet. That's for little kids. I book nightclubs and the Catskill Mountains, you know. And so I don't know where I got it from. I said, how about, because they were big words, I said, how about the unusual artistry of Sid Croft? My name wasn't Sid Croft. My real name is Sidney Snitkovsky. My mother and father came from Russia, or where the war is now. And they ran away in the Russian Revolution, and they ended up in Canada, and that's where I was born. Okay, so he said, I'm going to change your name. I can't even say your real name. And so he came up with Croft out of Snitkovsky, and it had one F, and I said, that's not big enough, and I added an F to it. So I became Sid Croft, you know. And my whole family, when I was in Europe touring, they all decided to change their name, didn't even ask me, to Croft. Because I was doing, you know.
Because you're you.
Well, my act was.
You're a golden child. It
was a big deal. You know, I played all over the world, and, you know, and so.
Did your dad warm up to the idea with the dollies?
No. No, he was just interested in the money. My dad passed away in 1949. Mm. This is how crazy I am. I saw an ad in Variety. They were looking for novelty act for the Sonja Henie's ice show next to Radio City Music Hall. Mm-hmm. Was called Center Theater. It was the sister theater. And she had like 150 people, big production. And every year she would change the show. Sonja Henie was the first Olympic ice skater. Mm-hmm. Huge in movies. She did movies too. And I couldn't ice skate, but I faked it. And went in and auditioned. I held on to my rack with my puppets. I wheeled that all out. And she was sitting in the dark theater with the choreographer or whatever. And said, did you give the pianist your music? I said, I need a whole orchestra. I can't, you know, just a piano. I said, this is my opening number. This is my second, you know, and I was holding on to the rack. 3 days later, I was hired and walked away with all the reviews. No one ever saw anything on ice skates. I couldn't go backwards. My dad would hand me the next puppet off stage, spin me around and push me back out. I couldn't stop.
Wow.
You know? But I became...
sensation.
That was... my big, big break, you know, being in that show.
Was that after the circus?
Yeah.
So how long were you in the circus for?
2 seasons. I quit the first. I never made a season.
And it was very dangerous, you were saying.
Yeah. They offered me $40 a week. And
that's
good. I got so frightened that I was going to leave home.
Because were you by yourself?
Yeah.
My real question is...
they wouldn't allow my parents.
So... but what I'm trying to get to is just look how crazy this time is. I think we're overcorrected as a society now.
Yeah.
But you are undercorrected because totally. You didn't have any.
So I quit school.
You're 15 years old.
I quit school.
And you didn't sign emancipation papers.
No.
So their parents can't go and you're there with.
Alone. With
the freak show. But the freaks are the sweeter people.
Yeah.
It's the. So
they didn't even like each other.
So we're. You were worried about being taken advantage of.
Well, not only that, it was a strange, dark dark world, you know, because the blacks who were the muscle of they put up the circus, they were not allowed to be anywhere around the Midway. When the Midway opened, the Big Top, they had to all go back to the train because blacks were like.
So you're talking about black people.
Yeah.
Who did all the hard work.
Yeah.
They weren't allowed to be around the
people. And we were not allowed. We'd be fired immediately. The circus, Ringling Brothers Barnum and Bailey died in the 1800s. So the circus was huge business. We played the Grove.
He died, but it came bigger after he died, you're saying?
It was run by the mafia.
Okay.
Yeah. Because it was huge. We'd come into town and played to 30,000 people. Tickets were $1 and $2 in the Big Top, right? Mm-hmm. And the sideshow was 50 cents. And I realized it years later. I went out on the ballet stage all day long. We did 12 shows a day. And I said a few minutes ago, they offered me $40 a week. And I said, I can't do.
So you
that's not enough.
You're doing 12 shows a day times 7 times 12 is 80.
No, the sideshow opens first because there's hundreds of thousands, it seems like, people that come out.
You're doing 84 shows a week.
Oh, yes.
What time do
you start? No, because you're traveling. You know, it keeps breaking up. You're only in a city for one day. And then, the trains leave at midnight and the sideshow comes in first. We're in the first train.
Did you ever have a day off?
No. And there's no shower or anything like that. They, underneath my stage, the stages are 6 foot tall. So everybody, 3,000 people in the tent can see. They go from stage to stage. It's like a big circle. And for 50 cents a week, there's a water boy that gives you 2 buckets a day. 1 bucket you can drink the water to drink, and the other bucket you bathe and wash your clothes in.
Oh, my God.
No, it was a really hard life.
Who kept all the money?
I send it home. I supported my family.
You supported your family at 15. Yeah. But the mob got all the money?
Well, yeah, they in the 40s and the 50s, you know, especially the 50s, the mob, soon as there was a successful business, you know, they took over.
Yeah.
Well, look, when I played Vegas with Judy Garland, that was like the mob. Can you imagine a puppet act? That was the real mob. There were like 5 hotels. When I see pictures now of the marquee, Judy Garland and my name, 75% billing, you know, on the huge marquee. The Flamingo was sitting in the middle of the desert alone. I could have bought land on the strip for $500 an acre. Yeah, an acre. And what an asshole I was.
Do you know what's so funny?
Yeah.
Do you know what's so funny? 1.35 acres yesterday was from the Polo Towers to the new Flamingo, which is, I don't know if you've been to Vegas lately.
At the end of the
100,
strip.
MGM just bought it. Guess how much?
How many billion?
$162 million for 1.3 acres.
Oh, well, yesterday. Yeah.
By the way, we all had moments. Listen, it doesn't matter. You're doing great.
No, I know you're a brilliant comedian, you know, and it's crazy because in 1960, I lived off of Hollywood Boulevard, up a street called Whitley.
I love Whitley.
And $75 a month I paid for this little, It was a coach house. That's where Valentino kept his horses up there. He didn't live there.
Oh, I thought you were saying
and there was a little coach house while we were doing Puffin stuff and Lidsville and up until Land of the Lost, I lived in that little house,
mm-hmm.
and I didn't learn how to drive because I used to live, every time I came to town, Hollywood, I lived at the Chateau Marmont. And, you know, the Chateau Marmont, when I came here in 1950,
mm-hmm.
After the big ice show in New York, I played Earl Carroll's Vanities. That was like the Ziegfeld Follies.
Mm-hmm.
And it was across the street from the Palladium, that beautiful building,
mm-hmm.
you know. And then it became the Moulin Rouge. I played there a lot, mm-hmm. too. But Earl Carroll had already been killed in a plane crash when I came. And so that show was like, I don't know, 100 women in it. It was all tits and ass, you mm-hmm. know. Yeah. And so, and that's when Hollywood, you know, I'm real, real curious. I like to look under the rug, you know, about everything. You know, you can learn so much.
Yeah.
In traveling the world more than you can in school. That's why my dad said, "We're going to be millionaires. You're making $50 a week."
Mm-hmm.
You know, in the circus.
I didn't go to college. I agree with you.
No, I quit. Yeah. I quit school when I was 15.
Yeah.
And so, and you can all tell my vocabulary is not.
Beautiful. But you're going, can I ask you some questions? Because you're starting to go down the Sid lane. Here's my question. Because you said something beautiful. $75 a month. You're staying in that house. You had a point. What was your point? That Hollywood was what?
I used to walk down. It 1960 was the first star, and the first day was Mae West, Lucille Ball, and Judy Garland.
I mean, stars on the ground.
Yeah.
First time they ever put them is 1960.
And I used to walk down, and who would know, just 10, 15 years later, all those names work for me. All of them. I mean, who would know that, you know, when I played the Catskills, you know, Milton Berle. I worked with Milton Berle, you know, Sid Caesar. I mean, it was like, those were the kings of comedy.
Still.
I became friendly with Milton Berle. He used to call me all the time because he had all these little cards in filing cabinets with jokes. And he'd call me to tell me a joke that he stole or heard from another comedian, you know. And he was a trip. I had him on the Donnie Marie Show and the Brady Bunch Hour. I mean, it's insane where life takes you, you know.
Yes.
It's really unreal.
I could talk to you for hours, but I want to really start drilling in on some questions for you now because it's incredible.
I talk too much.
No, you don't. The first thing you remember what the first thing you said to me when you met me? You don't remember. I said, "How old are you?" And you said, 94. And you said, "I can still get a boner."
I can say, isn't that cool?
It's beautiful. But I asked you if dust comes out.
Dust. Yeah, gray dust.
The original gray Puppets dust.
I used to be able to hit the ceiling.
So wait, let me. So the way Hollywood was and the way it is, I mean.
No. That's a real good question.
Well,
because I was so curious.
Yeah, you said you looked under the rug. So I'm like,
code? That I went to some pretty wild things because Hollywood was, you know, what they got away with. It was Babylon. Babylon. The Chateau Marmont across the street was the Garden of Allah. It was a motel.
I remember that.
It was the biggest whorehouse on the planet. That's where all the stars went, you know, to get lucky. But up the street on Sunset, at the end of Sunset, was a gas station, 76 gas station. And that's where the limousines would ride up and pick up. They had the most incredible looking guys because that came to Hollywood, that wanted to be Hollywood movie stars, and they couldn't get, you know, off the ground. And this pimp who wrote a book, Scotty Bowers, Scotty Bowers, I went to parties. It was Babylon in Hollywood, and you got away with everything that today you not only have to be real careful, one word could end your career. One word.
I
know. Like boner. That could end your career.
Wait a minute. So wait, you say so much.
No.
So the limousine shipped these beautiful men. And they put them down where? They took them to the Grand Lux? And stay
They would pick them up. That's where all the big movie stars.
But so they were there, and they're gonna be our little flesh puppets.
Yeah.
Okay, so I have to see the movie Babylon, and it looks incredible.
Oh God! That's Hollywood.
So when I watch, I want to say it was Chaplin or one of these movies I saw, and because I'm gonna start to say focus, I live in Hollywood. Okay. I've always lived here for 35 years in this area. I used to live at the Whitley Terrace. I used to live on the Franklin Arms. This is, for some reason, Sid. You know, both my parents have passed. God rest their soul. My mom was a little younger than you when she died. I was very fortunate. You know, they had them a long time. And immigrants, like your mother, my mother got in a moped accident when I was 10 years old. Got up, her leg's bloody, and she says, piece of shit, and threw it. Like, just tough. You know what I mean? Like, that's how I was raised, by a very tough mother a lot of kids. And so, I lost my point. So, I'm on my own journey, like you're talking about.
Me too.
And Hollywood, I've lived in Philly my whole life. When I'm 18, I come out here. And this area, I go to Venice, I go to Malibu, I go to downtown LA. For some reason, the blocks between Highland and Doheny, from Fountain to the Hills, is my home. This is just where I feel is my home.
Because that's where all the action is.
Exactly. Energy. If you read Brando's book, he said the line would go from the Man's Chinese past Western. And for those who know, that was a premiere. The line of people that would look, that's miles. You know what I mean? He said it was Frank Sinatra, someone else, and him. Like, it was like each thing had their humongously global star. And it's the energy is here. So when I was watching this movie, Chaplin, or one of them, this whole area from Fairfax to La Brea was Charlie Chaplin's property. And the two big houses.
What about Mae West? Mae West. You know, I wanted her to record. We did a puppet show.
Yes.
That put us on the map.
It always comes back to puppets.
Les Poupées de Paris.
Yes.
I mean, that put us totally on the map. It played to millions and millions of people. But you had to be 21 to see it. It was tits and ass.
Yes.
You know, and
tits, ass, and wooden.
You could get splinters.
Yes.
Okay. Naked women.
Okay.
But all puppets.
Tits, ass, and wooden dicks.
Yeah. No. And so.
Too far.
It opened at the Seattle World's Fair, played the New York World's Fair, at Broadway. You know, it was in Vegas for years. And people were coming to see. You had to be 21. There was nothing dirty. It was like the Lido or
you
the
just
Folly
said it was
Bajet.
TNA.
Yeah, TNA.
That's
what it was. But it was a trip because we even, for I think it was 6 months, we played the Playboy Club in New York, right? And it's all guys. Who comes to the Playboy?
Yeah.
And they would get fucking pissed drunk and come upstairs and see wooden tits. Yeah. I mean, it was a sensation in New York.
Yeah. Wait, so I have a question.